So if I'm not wrong, are all three of you guys like preacher's kids?
Pretty much.
Me and Devin and I are.
Yeah.
And his parents, yeah.
Yeah, my dad isn't an ordained preacher, but he might as well have been. He's a very good man of God. He's strict, you know, in a good way, and maybe a little too strict, but he's a great man of God. So I was raised in a Christian household, and these guys were too, to an extent. We've all kind of got similar stories, but did you want me to share a little bit about that? Okay. Well, yeah, Devin's right. I can talk a lot. They know it. I'll try not to be too long-winded, but I've met most of you all. I don't know how many of you have all heard my story, but I went through the program Teen Challenge, a one-year Christian-based recovery program. It all started, like I said, I was raised in a Christian household with strict parents, loving parents. We were a very, very close family, but maybe I was a little too hard-headed, and I started to rebel a little young. It started out very small, or at least I thought it was small, listening to heavier music, you know, metal, screamo. And it just kind of, it started out really small. We all started that way.
What age and what bands?
I mean, you name it. Like,
don't lie. He was a Blink-182 fan. If anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Singing it in
like,
sleep. Metal.
I liked Blink-182, but, I mean, Chiodos, Under Oath, a lot of bands like that. The Warped Tour. They make fun of how
tour.
I say tour.
Warped,
Warped
tour.
Tour.
How do you say tour?
Tour.
Tour. How do you say tour?
Tour.
Tour. Like, so
it's not
like,
T-O-R-E.
No.
It's T-O-U-R. Tour. Tour.
How do you guys say roof?
Roof.
Roof. It's definitely a roof.
Roof.
It's not roof.
It's and
roof.
It's Route 66.
Yeah. Route. Either way.
So I digress.
When I was 12 years old is really when I can start to see the change in my life. Looking back on it, I really started. I would say, honestly, I don't know who's heard of Limp Bizkit, but it started out with them probably when I was 12 years old. Yeah.
That's why it's so whiny sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. And, it started out with that. And it was really hateful music. And I started out listening to it for the instruments, you know, for the drums and the guitars and stuff like that. I would tell myself, you know, I want to play like them. But that came along with, you know, hateful lyrics and just the whole mindset that comes along with constantly listening to that music. And it just started giving me a lot of anger. You know, I started going through puberty, so I already had a lot of testosterone. I started playing sports, and I was just an angry kid growing up. So I ended up going to high school, you know, with this mentality, kind of, you know, I'm tough, I'm big and bad. I started wrestling. I ended up getting in with the wrong crowd, drinking on the weekends, partying, smoking weed. At first, it just kind of seemed like I knew it was wrong, but I was kind of telling myself, I'm going to get out of this. It's not going to be forever. You know, I'm going to do this while I'm young, get it out of my system. And I'm sure a lot of people that start out that way tell themselves the same thing. But
what's that?
What did you believe during that time?
During that time, I believed that I was a Christian. I mean, I was serving Jesus. I had a relationship with Jesus. And I was actually playing in my church worship band. I was playing guitar back then. And, I mean, I was going to church every Sunday. I was going to youth group. I was living, you know, the Christian life. But at the same time, I was doing things on the weekend, like I said, partying. So I believed that I was doing the right thing when it comes to living life as a Christian. But at the same time, I would kind of let things slide and do things that I knew weren't right, but I would kind of tell myself Jesus would forgive me, you know, it'll be okay. But deep down, I knew that it was wrong. I could feel the tugging of the Holy Spirit telling me that it was wrong. I mean, the whole entire time, it was kind of like a knot in my stomach or a knot in my heart. I knew that I was letting my parents down. I knew that I was letting Jesus down. So it was a rough spot, but I kept telling myself that I could get out of it. That I didn't need help. You know, at that stage, I wasn't drinking every day or smoking weed every day, so I was like, it's just a weekend thing. So I kept living like that for a while, and then it just... A while. Let's see. The drinking didn't start until high school, then the marijuana, because I was hanging out with the older guys on the wrestling team. Like I said, I started wrestling, so they started making that seem like, you know, the cool guys, the, you know, the cool thing to do, drink on the weekends, party. So I started doing that with them probably 15 years old when I was a freshman. And it just started progressing, started getting worse from there. I don't know if you've heard anybody say the snowball effect with sin, but it's really true. If, you know, if you sense the Holy Spirit telling you, you know, you need to check something or, you know, stop something, it's important to listen to that because it really does snowball. I just started, you know, ignoring that little whisper, that little calling that I knew was God, and I just started getting worse and worse and worse. I started missing out on things. My little sister's here. I'll tell you about how awesome that is in a little bit. But I started missing out on a lot of her growing up. My little brother, I missed out a lot on him growing up. And those are things that I can never get back. You know, and I basically just started living for myself. You know, and then I started trying, because of that sinful lifestyle, I started getting a void. I just started feeling empty and depressed. And I knew something was wrong. I knew something needed to change. But because I was in that lifestyle, I started looking for the wrong things to fill that void. I ended up hurting my back wrestling, got prescribed painkillers. And that was the wrong thing to happen to me because I was already in that lifestyle. I had, you know, an addictive personality. I had a void in my life that I had caused through sin. So the painkillers started giving me relief from pain, but also an escape from that void. They would just kind of give me a euphoric, you know.
Oxycodone or
something? Yeah, oxycodone, Percocet. Yeah, I was prescribed Percocets, which I don't know, you know, how much you know about them, but it's very similar to heroin. They're opiates. They're in the same family. You pretty much get the same feeling from them, but I was prescribed a low dosage of them, and it just started getting worse and worse, and I became dependent on them. So it started progressing. By the time I was out of high school, you know, the prescription painkillers really started after high school, but I had started smoking weed and drinking very often in high school. But when the painkillers started taking off after high school, it was just a very slippery slope because they're very addictive, and it started out just trying to numb that pain, and then it turned into an addiction to where I had to take them to feel normal. I had to take them to, you know, to survive, basically, and you'd wake up feeling sick if you didn't have them, and you just feel miserable.
How'd you get them? Did you get, like, desperate?
Yeah, well, I was prescribed them for a long time, and then, you know, once I got addicted to them, and my tolerance went up, and the doctor was no longer prescribing the amount that I needed, he started buying them on the street and doing things, and that actually ended up leading to a heroin addiction, which is, unfortunately, a big problem nowadays, and it has been for a while. There's a lot in the community, I mean, all over the place. I come from D.C., you know, before I came to Delaware. I lived there for 14 years, but it's just as bad out here. I mean, you hear about it in the news all the time, and it usually starts out with people just doing prescription painkillers, which leads to heroin, and that's what happened to me and these guys also. But I basically got to a point in my life where my family had to cut me off. My dad wouldn't let my family talk to me because of the example I was setting for my sister and my brother, and just all the hurt that I was causing, the things that I was doing. Just they were tearing my family apart. So my family ended up moving back to St. Louis, not necessarily because of me, but because they had to, they had a house out there, and they wanted to get back there, kind of get out of the D.C. area. So my family moved to St. Louis, and I didn't see them or talk to them for 3.5 years. My dad said, you know, until you go to Teen Challenge, you know, you're not going to talk to my family. You're not going to talk to us. We love you, but, you know, he did the tough love thing, which I'm sure you've heard of, you know, when it comes to addictions. And honestly, that's what saved my life. I felt like I hated my dad for those 3.5 years. I was angry, furious at him. But if it weren't for him doing that, I probably would have never got to a place in my life where I had nowhere to turn but Jesus. And it's a very miraculous thing that happened. 3.5 years had gone by. I didn't see my family, hear from them, or anything. And I ended up wrecking my truck. Flipped over a couple times. I ended up landing in a ditch, and I hit a transformer, which had a lot of voltage, or I don't know, I'm not an electrician, but there are basically electrical wires hanging above me. I should have died. I've got pictures of it, and I didn't get hurt. I got out with a scratch. not even a scratch. And the EMTs and the paramedics that came to get me, they basically thought they saw a ghost. I mean, the wreckage was just crazy. And I had the EMT that was in the ambulance say, "I don't know what your beliefs are. I don't know if you're, you know, a Christian, but I feel like God or somebody's trying to tell you something." So, and I was, at this point, I was kind of in shock. I was really in shock, and I was just kind of like, yeah, maybe. So I go to the hospital. At that point in my life, this was probably the emptiest that I felt, the most depressed that I was, but I never once turned my back and said, "I hate you, God." I never said, "This is because of you, God." I knew it was because of my own doing. So in my heart, I still love Jesus, but I was just empty and depressed. I'm a hard-headed person, so I was just trying to live life on my own, and I knew it. I knew that it was because of my own doing, but I kind of, in the back of my mind, was like, "All right, I'm gonna do this on my own. You know, I'm gonna prove my family that I can do this on my own." And essentially, what I was saying was, "I want to prove to God that I can do this on my own." And
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
From like a family standpoint, how did your parents blame themselves for your behavior? Did they feel like, what did we do wrong? Like, did your church growing up, did like your youth pastor say like, what am I doing wrong? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
These are people who care about you, and you're basically saying, nah, to heck with everything you guys want for me.
Yeah, I know my parents definitely had some points where they blamed themselves. They were trying to figure out, you know, what did I do wrong in raising him? You know, youth pastors, I was probably one of the most hard-headed kids in youth group, so I gave them a lot of trouble. But, I mean, honestly, what it came down to was I was just a hard-headed person. You know, I'm sure nobody's perfect. My parents probably could have done some things different growing up, but the fact that I made the decisions that I made were my decisions. You know, my parents weren't to blame. And, you know, now that we've reconciled, I've told them that, you know, it's not their fault. You know, and they didn't do anything. In fact, they were there. They loved me. And the fact that my dad did the tough love thing, looking back on it, I'm so thankful. You know, I tell them that. And I think as parents, they did the right thing. You know, when they needed to do the tough love, they did. So I do feel... Yeah, even though I didn't like them at the time, you know, looking back now after going through all that, I'm so thankful that they did that. So yeah, I mean, it really wasn't their fault. They were loving growing up. You know, they didn't do any, you know, drugs. They weren't drinking when we were growing up. It's not like I had an example like that, you know, that I grew up thinking, okay, well, that's exactly what I want to be like. You know, I grew up with good role models. So, you know, I feel like they did a great job. It was my own hard-headedness that got me where I was.
So fast forward back to the accident.
Back to the accident.
Just a little side button.
Yeah, I'm so easily distracted, so get me on track if you need to. So the first person had told me that, you know, God's trying to tell me something, which was pretty obvious, the fact that I was alive. And then a cop, or actually one of the firemen, had told me that they think God was trying to tell me something first. It was one of the guys on the scene. And then I got into the ambulance. And the lady that was checking my pulse, taking all my vitals, asking me questions, she was like, "Man, I don't know what you believe, but that was a miracle. I've never seen anybody survive something like that." I mean, she said they've had somebody parked or crashed right underneath the transformer like I did, and the electricity jumps through the air. I don't know how many feet, like 20 feet. They just had someone a week before crash a block away into a transformer, and it zapped them, and he didn't make it. Let alone flipping my truck, being, you know, smashed to pieces. I had a 12-inch knife that was under my floorboard that landed right next to my head. The airbags deployed. I shouldn't have been alive. There's so many things stacked against me. So she said that. I get into the hospital, and the doctor is giving me x-rays, saying, you know, "Do you feel anything? I mean, are you hurting?" I was like, "No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if I'm in shock, but I don't have any blood or anything." The x-rays came back, and I was fine. I had nothing wrong with me. And the doctor came in, and he said, and this was the third person, and none of them had talked to each other. He came up to me and said, "You know, I'm not really supposed to talk about my faith at work, but I feel that Jesus is trying to tell you something." And I was like, "Okay, I'm listening." All right, I'm not gonna keep doing this on my own. This is definitely you, God, and I'm sorry for running. So I contacted Teen Challenge here in Delaware, Pastor Bob, and he ended up letting me come in. And, you know, my story was a little different. Some guys are sentenced there. Some guys come in willingly. You know, but for me, because of that crazy incident, I came in basically just saying, I'm yours. You know, do whatever you want with me, God. I'm tired of living for myself. Whatever you tell me to do is what I'm going to do. And, you know, I went through the whole program and Teen Challenge with that mindset, just wanting to build my relationship with Jesus, get things back on track. I met James, I met Devin, and we did the program together. One of the funny things about, this is where my sister comes into play. I had a couple pictures of Maddie that she sent me, because I hadn't talked to her in so long, so she sent me some pictures of, I mean, she changed a lot in 3.5 years. So she sent me some pictures, and James kept seeing them because I used them as bookmarkers in my Bible. And the whole time, he kept telling me, man, I'm going to marry your sister when we get out of here. I was like, no. Okay.
I met her at graduation, and we're married now.
Yeah.
Was that to tick him off, or was that sincere?
No, like, I was like, dude, she's hot.
Wouldn't that make a brother mad?
Well, it did, but it didn't, because I didn't think it was actually going to happen. I didn't even know they were actually going to meet. I mean, I figured they would, but... And then
I got to meet their strict dad with tough
love. Oh, yeah. That's a whole other story. They're good now, by the way. They get along for the most part. He hasn't shot at him in a couple days.
Who, me and your dad?
Yeah. Yeah. So Maddie came to my graduation with my family. Met James. We graduated the same day. We entered the program around the same time, graduated the same date. And he met Maddie, and he had a really corny pickup line that he was going to use on her, but he got too scared to use it. I don't remember how it exactly
I had a pack of icebreakers, and I was going to, like, you know, that commercial, break the ice. Didn't work.
So, yeah, they basically started talking, and it took off from there. They fell in love with each other. They knew it was the one. They wanted to be with each other, and now they're married. So it actually did happen. Yeah. And the cool thing about that is I didn't see Maddie for so long. Now she's pretty much my neighbor, you know, and that's the last thing I expected, you know, coming out of Teen Challenge is living near my sister. So, I mean, that's really cool. And I just kept praying, and basically when I graduated Teen Challenge, you know, I kept telling God, you know, whatever you want to do in my life is what I want to do. Ministry, you know, if that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. And specifically about a girl, I prayed and I said, I'm not going to go out seeking somebody. I'm not going to go out on my own emotions because I've been in a program for a year with a bunch of guys and find, you know, the first pretty girl that I see and try and talk to her.
Pizza
I was
King.
Like,
what about the girl at Pizza King?
No.
Okay. We're not going to talk about that. Okay.
No. Crazy. So basically, that I just said, you know, whenever you want me to be with somebody, just make it very known. And you know, I want it to be a you thing, not something that I'm doing on my own strength. I met Jess, and we started talking. I'm just really getting to know each other. And, you know, getting to know our belief systems and who we were, you know, I really started falling in love with her heart and who she was as a person, not just the fact that she's beautiful all over, you know, and she has an awesome family. I'm not really sucking up. I'm just... You guys
are right. It just sounds like
it. It just sounds like it. I promise. But we just started talking, and I mean, the way God has worked things out, I mean, it's been so amazing. She loves Jesus more than me, more than she loves me, and it's just, that's the most important thing, and she's been such an amazing wife.
Yeah, you clarified that. That's funny. She loves Jesus more than me, like, yeah. It was a competition.
Yeah, I cannot compete with her. She's very competitive, and she will put me in my place. So, but yeah, it's just the way God has worked things out. I never, you know, a few years ago would have pictured myself where I am now, you know, in a band with, you know, my closest friends, and, you know, we've got some really cool opportunities. We're getting to do music, you know, that we love to do, for Jesus, and it's just, it's awesome. I'm married to the most amazing woman, have the my sister living near me. You know, I've got a new family in Christ. Got an awesome new church. I mean, this is just, it's awesome. I don't even know how to tell you guys how amazing of a feeling this is, going from a life full of emptiness and just drug addiction and depression to just serving Jesus and, you know, my needs being met and God providing. It's just, it's amazing. So thank you for dealing with all my talking.
I often, when I tell my story, the short version is, me in charge of my life is a disaster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Maybe I should have just
said that. Well, we kind of like the story part of it, too.
Yeah.
No, I kind of, okay, so it does not sound to me like it was, you grew up, you saw a version of Christianity that was like, ah, I'm not going to do that, that's stupid, or that's empty. It didn't. That's not what I'm hearing. I'm hearing you veered off and you went after some things that sucked you in, yeah, deceived you, and grew into an addiction.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I mean, growing up, there were some things in Christianity that I didn't like. Like, I mean, I did see some hypocrites, but there's hypocrites in every walk of life, you know, everywhere you go. It's not just Christianity, and I realized that. But I did see things like the music, for instance. Back then, especially Christian music, wasn't as good as I thought, you know.
He's not a Twyla Paris fan. Everybody remember her?
I do.
Yeah.
Who?
Never mind.
Okay.
She says,
but,
God is in, yeah, control.
So there were things about this, like the secular world, that drew me in. I mean, I loved, you know, I loved Jesus, and I genuinely had compassion for people, and I loved being a Christian. But there were just things about the world that drew me in, you know, like the partying. You know, I still want to go out and have quote unquote fun. You know, I felt like sometimes I couldn't have enough fun, but that stuff is not fun, and I know it now. So yeah, that's basically. Basically, did you have any other questions about my past or anything?
Really detailed, specific ones that are awkward and embarrassing. No, we're not doing that.